Well, this is a special day. I've never had a princess on my show before, but here she is, the Amazonian princess of voiceover, Susan Eisenberg. Hi, Susan.
I love that introduction.
Well, it's absolutely true. I was thinking, we're going to get into this in a little bit. I want to do the whole story. We'll get into Wonder Woman. But I was thinking, you have to be the longest actor to have ever played that character now at this point, right?
I think so. I think so, because I booked the job, I think, in 2000.
Wow, so, coming up on 20 years,
yeah,
a little bit.
So I think so. And of course, it hasn't been straight through.
Right,
there have
of
been
course.
Off years.
But you've owned it.
Well.
To many of us, you are the quintessential Wonder Woman.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, it's a really tricky thing, because at the end of the day, you don't have ownership of it. And it's such an easy character to feel ownership of.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it's the greatest gig in the world. And yet you have to be, you know, you have to be generous when other people are voicing her.
Yeah.
Or at least you try to be. Because certainly there are a lot of other women doing that.
Yeah, I was.
Especially Gal.
Right, yes. Oh, sure, her.
Her.
I did a little research because I was thinking along those lines, and I looked into Shannon Farnan, who played her in Super Friends
yeah.
for about a decade.
Right.
And then, like you said, I mean, someone else came along and she lost the gig. So I guess that's the nature of the beast. But
it is, and that's the nature of the business.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not comfortable with being fired or replaced or not hired, wrong business.
Yeah.
Because most of the things that you audition for, you're not going to get.
Right.
So it has been, when the Justice League ended, I never expected to do it again, frankly. I mean, I hoped and prayed.
Sure.
But, I mean, I didn't think I would. And then I got a call years later about a movie, a straight-to-DVD. And so that was like the gift from the gods, if you will. And then since then, it's been pretty steady.
Yeah. We'll talk about her for sure. But I want to get to your origin story, your own origin story. Kid out of Rhode Island, right? Providence?
Yeah, Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah.
Born and raised in New England, and used to do radio spots for my dad's business. He had a retail store in Rhode Island, and I used to go to his, he would appear on these radio programs about once a week, and it was like a local show, and it would be people sitting around talking about local politics.
Wow.
And then during the break, there'd be an ad for his business, and I would read the ad on air, and I would, and the rest of the show, I'd just sit back and take it all in. And I fell in love with radio.
Hmm.
I fell in love with that whole experience. Everything about it enchanted me. And, but not, I wasn't like, oh, okay, I'm going to be a voiceover actor when I grow up. But then when I started doing acting and I got some jobs on camera, realized, nah, not so much. Don't love the on-camera thing. Decided to pursue the voiceover.
How old were you when you were reading the spots for your dad?
Young. I was in high school.
Oh, that is young.
Yeah.
Did you do theater and stuff in school when you were coming up?
I did.
So you already had sort of the bug by the time you got there.
I did. But more than even that, I just was enamored by show business.
Hmm.
You know, even as a little girl, like my first concert was Steven Eady. You know, I mean, honest to
How
God.
Quintessential show business.
Right?
That's old school.
Old school. But
yeah.
That's, and my parents would look at me like, who are you? I'm the youngest of four children. I'm the only one who had that to the degree. Like, I just loved Carson. I wanted to watch Carson. I fell in love with Sinatra. Saw him many times in concert. You know, I would go see Tony Bennett by myself.
Wow,
you know,
as a kid.
You know, as a kid. And then when I was really young, Steven Eady, my parents took me to Framingham, Massachusetts to see them. But, I mean, it was, you know, that I just had that infatuation with show business and what it embodied and what it entailed. And I just wanted to be a part of it somehow. And California was just like, you know, so romantic to me.
Sure.
And now that I'm here.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I remember growing up as a kid in Philadelphia, I would listen to the Beach Boy records and I would dream someday of being in California because that's where all the magic was happening. I was the same way as a kid. I used to watch TV shows and movies, and I had a tangential relationship to the entertainment business because my father was a sales manager for Paramount Pictures. Mm-hmm. So he booked the films into theaters locally in Philadelphia and Jersey and those places. So I already knew that regular people like me could work for show business in some capacity.
Wow,
you know?
That's unusual.
And that's
so
how
many people don't have that sense at all.
No,
so
because it's so far removed for most of us.
Completely.
So as a kid, were you watching TV and movies and saying that's the life for me kind of thing?
It was, I don't know that I imagined that I'd be a part of it in any capacity, but I was obsessed with television and movies and performances and concerts and things like that. I mean, I would literally get the TV guide and memorize it from cover to cover and just go through it and bookmark things. If there was something fabulous, you know, a concert on PBS or, you know, my parents had season tickets to the theater in Providence, Trinity Rep. And, you know, I have all my playbills from that time in my life. Wow. So there was just, again, it wasn't practical. It wasn't like, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to study this, but it was like, I need to be a part of it in some way. I'm not sure how, but I'm going to be a part of it in some way.
And for those who are listening who don't know what the TV guide is.
Oh, God.
There used to be a time when you didn't have a guide on your television. You had to look things up in a book. I miss that experience of leafing through it and sort of bookmarking and highlighting. Oh, I got to catch that show on Wednesday. I don't want to miss that.
Well, and if you missed it, you missed it.
That was it. It was gone. It was in the ether.
It was. Yeah. And then, until we got the VCR.
Right.
Well, kids, the VCR, see? You know, I mean, it's really a different time. It's like,
so ridiculous. And I think
you and I are the exact same age.
I think we are, yeah.
So that's
we grew up in that era.
Right. Yeah. We have all the same references to all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So you're reading stuff for your dad,
yeah,
and you're falling in love with radio. Mm-hmm. At some point, the light bulb has to go off and you say, okay, I'm all in. I'm going to try to pursue a career in this, right?
Yes.
And what point was that for you?
You know, I guess in my mid-20s, I was lucky enough to work for this lovely director, Lamont Johnson, who put me in a movie that working on with him as his assistant. And he put me in, it was starred Shelley Long, and I had a bunch of scenes on camera, and I really didn't like it. It made me so anxious and nervous. And again, maybe if I'd given myself some time to grow into it.
I think we're all nervous at the outset.
I'm nervous now. I mean, like, we're always nervous. I mean, anyone who's not nervous isn't alive as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you don't care if you're not nervous. That's
right.
What I say.
And so, but it didn't feel like this does, like being in front of a microphone does. Mm. Being in front of a microphone feels so much more natural and comfortable to me than being in front of a camera ever did. And when they would say, just ignore the camera, pretend it's not there. I'm like, what are you, crazy?
That giant 100-pound box in your face.
I mean, how do people do that? It's such a gift. It's such an art to be able to just ignore it and live in front of a camera. So I wasn't able to do that. So when I worked for a lot of people, like as an assistant. So while I was doing all my assistant jobs, I decided to take classes in voiceover. I'd already studied acting. I'd already gone, you know.
Is this at American? You went to American University,
I went to
right?
American. I studied acting there. Then I went to the American Academy in New York, studied acting there.
And this was all on stage stuff, I assume, theater?
You know what? What's great about those programs was that they taught you about your body, your voice. It wasn't just, here's a script and go act.
Right.
It was improv. It was a lot of things. And it was training for all of it, really. And then I went to UCLA to take some voiceover classes and get prepared for that because I'd never done anything professionally. I'd done a bunch of things like people would say, hey, you want to do this? You want to, you know, will you do this on my show or blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't professional. It wasn't through the union.
Right.
And then I got serious and really took the class, got a demo reel, got an agent, and then we were off and running.
When did you come out to California then?
Right out of college.
Right out of college.
Yep. I went to New York to do the American Academy, and then I went back home, and I got a job for 6 months at a magazine in there, like as an assistant, and I was working there for 6 months, and they offered me a promotion, and it was like, okay, do I take the promotion and stay in Boston, which sounded great to me, or do I move to Los Angeles?
Mm.
And my mom said, go to L.A. You don't want to be 50. And be thinking,
Period. Right,
you don't want to be 50, honey,
ever.
Look at me, trust me. So yeah, you don't want to be 50 and think, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, go to LA. So I did, and I never looked back.
You're still not a nobody kid, but you're going out there a star. I had a teacher in college who said to me, I was at the same sort of crossroads, and he said, it may not be your destiny to stay in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. but it is your destiny to go. And mm-hmm. I think that's great advice because great. You can always go home, but there is a certain window in your life where you're sort of unencumbered by commitments and financial obligations and relationships where you can make that move and test the waters and see if you can make a go of it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, I knew I could come back if it didn't. It's interesting when people say I'm going to leave here, LA, it's not for me, or I decided it, you know, I want to raise a family somewhere else. It's like, great, mm-hmm. great. You know that it's not for you. Yeah. I never felt that. I always wanted to stay and keep going. I always believed that something would happen. I didn't know what. And, you know, I'm still trying. Like, if you're an actor in this business and you're at a certain level that's not Tom Hanks, you're always auditioning. You're always trying to get work.
Sure.
You know, so
the hustle never ends.
The hustle never ends. And at every level, it never ends. That's what's so astonishing. That's what I've recognized in the last few years.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure, as you know, I know some famous people and they're still hustling. And it's like, okay, we're all hustling.
I walk into an audition sometimes and look around at the people who are sitting on the bench and I go, that guy has to be in here mm-hmm. to read
yep.
five lines for a casting director. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And listen, for voiceover, you know, now there's so many celebrities doing commercials and they were always doing animated films, but now they're doing animated series.
Yeah.
You know, there are all these celebrities creating content. Conan O'Brien's doing it. And, you know, that's great, but it really does take away a lot of work from the average guy and gal.
Sure, because there used to be a small community of players who could depend on that for a living, and it was their domain. And mm-hmm. now, as you said, it's being encroached upon by people who a lot of producers will hire them just to put their name on the DVD Blu-ray box or on the poster or something. They may not necessarily be the best actor for the role, but they're getting them.
And I get it. You know, I get it. Like, if somebody
it's a business,
has, right? And if somebody has 2 million Instagram followers, you know, I understand. And sometimes, listen, that person with 2 million has something else going for her or him. I mean, there's obviously something that got them 2 million followers. And I understand that. It's the nature of the business, but it doesn't mean it's not heartbreaking
right.
to see that happen, because it is.
So when you got to California, is that when you got the gig in the Shelley Long movie? Well, you had already been out here when you got that?
Yeah, I got that out here. Yeah, working for Lamont.
But what was the film? Because now I have to dig it up and look at you.
Trudice, the lives within the, it was about a woman with multiple personalities.
Oh, wow. TV movie? Or
yes. No. It was a miniseries. Lamont did a lot of miniseries. He did the Kennedys of Massachusetts.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Right. It was with Martin Sheen, right?
Well, actually, I thought it was. It was with Steve Weber.
That was later then. Okay. Yeah. So, Steve Weber, right.
Yeah. And, you know, he had done Lipstick. He directed Lipstick with Marco Hemingway. And he was just an all around great guy. And, so that was after I'd been out here. That was, I think, 91.
Hmm.
And I got out here in 87. So I worked for a bunch of people. I worked for Charlie Fleischer.
Wow.
Yeah. That was like my first professional job. I worked at Disney for him.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That sounds like a verbal NDA agreement right there. Yeah. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about that. So you decide camera work isn't for me. I'm not comfortable in front of a camera. Do you make a conscious choice then to pursue a career in voice acting?
Yeah, I do. I mean,
so you did. It's so funny. Very few people seem to actually make that choice and pursue it. Everyone else seems to come at it through a side door or something, you know, almost by accident. But it's cool that you said, no, that's what I want to do, and you went for it.
Because I had been told more than a few times that I had something going on with my voice that people responded to. When I was an assistant, I heard it a lot. I was on the phone with people day in and day out.
Sure.
And when you hear that over and over and over, you know, it's like if somebody says you're beautiful or you're so smart, you tend to take it, you know, seriously after a while. And you're like, okay, what can I do with this? Is this something I can turn into something and make use of? And so that's why it was like, okay, there's a career there. But when I started out, no one knew what voiceover was, and everyone would be like, what is that? Now everyone's like, oh, do you do promo?
Right.
What do you do? Animation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone like kind of is a smartass about it.
When I had Phil LaMarr on here previously, Your buddy from the Justice League.
Yeah, my buddy.
I said earlier to Susan before we started recording, I'm working my way through the Justice League. I've got Green Lantern. Now I've got Wonder Woman. So I'm working my way through the whole gang. We talked about the fact that he when he started as well, he said no one knew what that job was or really even how to get it if you wanted to get into it. I mean, now this seems like there's a ton of voiceover agents and a lot of casting people and stuff. But back then, it wasn't nearly as widespread, I can imagine.
No one knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Including my parents that still are on the fence. But now, yeah, there's such a, everyone wants to do it. And, there's so much more work to get, except animation. You have to be in LA, but everything else you can be pretty much anywhere.
Yeah. Phil and I sort of thought that perhaps more people know about voiceover acting because of the internet and social media. You can look up now and say, who did the voice of that character that I love so much? Back when I was watching cartoons as a kid, you knew Mel Blanc.
Right,
and maybe June Foray, and that was it. Everyone else was a mystery. And I think that the ability to start to follow people like yourself and follow the people who are doing this for a career encourages other people to say, well, if she can do it or he can do it, maybe I can too.
Absolutely. And also you, it allows you to have a conversation with these people.
Yeah.
So if somebody has a question about voiceover, whether it's at a Comic-Con or online, they can ask me. And I mean, thank God people can find out who's voicing what, because that has allowed me to be here today with you. I mean, if, We finished the show in 2006. So if, I mean, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so if it weren't for the relationship I have with the fans, I wouldn't be sitting here now. I mean, that has just helped me stay in the game in so many ways. I mean, that and Warner Brothers.
Sure. That helps. That tiny little mom and pop shop over there in Burbank.
You've heard of them.
Yeah. I have. What was your first gig when you got into the business? Do you remember the first thing you landed?
You know, I did a bunch of gigs. Like I did the at Universal Studios, I did the Back to the Future ride. When people were out in the line, waiting outside in line to get in, I narrated this whole thing about Back to the Future, Michael J. Fox, all of that. That was a hoot because I was, you know, I was a fan and it was just exciting to be part of something that was that close to show business.
Right.
But I did like the Showa Foundation with Steven Spielberg, a buddy of mine helped start that program, James Mall. He asked me to do a bunch of narrations early on when the Showa Foundation was starting. So I was able to get gigs. I got a lot of gigs even before I had an agent.
Hmm.
And it was just word of mouth work. And also working for the people I was working for, showrunners who would put me in their TV show, like for a voiceover job.
Right.
I was very lucky that I worked with very kind people who would say, oh, okay, you're pursuing that? Here's a line in this, which is
rare.
What
a blessing, yeah.
Yeah, because most people don't want to know that you're pursuing acting when you're there to answer their phones.
Yes.
But the people I worked for, whether it was John Romano or Lamont, I mean, they were really kind. I worked for a casting director, so she would help me out. I mean, it was really a very gracious group of people that helped. And, but I think the first gig, I don't remember the first gig.
Okay.
But I remember.
That's good, because that means your body of work is so huge. Your career is so big, you can't even remember what the first one was.
Yeah, I have to look at that.
That's great.
Oh, Voices Within, The Lives of Trudy Chase. That's the miniseries.
Oh, okay.
Ding, ding. You know, it was probably a commercial, like a Payless commercial, which I think was the first commercial I got. And then I think the first animated show I got was like Extreme Ghostbusters.
Oh, wow.
And the first video game I did, I think, was Brute Force. And it was so long ago that when we recorded Brute Force, we were all together in the room. That never happens.
You never get to read with the other actors anymore. No.
Ever. With a video game, it never happens. So that shows you how long ago it was.
Do you find, it's interesting, you started out primarily doing narration and stuff like that. I'm not in your league as terms of a voice actor, but I audition for a ton of stuff and I've get little jobs here and there. I find narration incredibly difficult. I find the acting gigs are much easier for me than narration or even spokesperson stuff. That's a unique gift to be able to sell that stuff and do it well. Is that difficult for you at all, or does that come naturally?
That's not difficult. There are other things that are difficult, but that's not one of them, especially if it's well written.
Yeah.
Then it's okay. You know, it's tricky when something's not well written and you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, this is why I get paid the big bucks, to make this come off the page. But
because
no
one speaks like this.
No one talks like that. But otherwise, it's okay. For me, ironically, the harder part for me was always animation.
Really?
Yeah, even though it's
with your acting background.
Yeah, but you know what? Because this has been a bit of a trap for me, but because I made my living early on doing my voice, I got into a little bit of a, I put myself into a corner and, it was about sounding a certain way.
Oh, I see.
Right? Sounding, sounding good and sounding like articulating the words and all this. And so when you would go to do a character, there wasn't a sense of freedom that so many other actors have. And also a sense of like, I don't give a shit if this doesn't work, and I don't care if it doesn't sound great, and I don't care if I'm just going to go for it. That took me a long time to get to that level of confidence where I could just, okay, I'm going to just go for this and let it rip.
Yeah. Because as an actor, when you're doing voice work, if you're slaving over every syllable, want to make sure everything is clearly heard and enunciated, you lose a sense of natural quality that really helps when you're selling.
Totally. But because I made my living very early on, I made it for things like commercials that I had to sound polished and upscale, classy,
right,
if you will.
Yeah.
So then if you're, you know, trying to sound trampy or, you know, whatever, colorful. So that took me a little bit longer to get. I mean, and even Wonder Woman is a princess and she's classy, very.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she sounds a certain way and she enunciates. So it was really tricky for me to like just put down that and not care.
It sounds like, though, your background and the fact that you were in that corner and you sort of leaned that way with your gifts probably helped you land Wonder Woman, I would think, because there is a certain regalness about her and a certain quality that is classy and powerful. And you've sort of been working on that all along, doing the other stuff that you had done.
I think so. And when I left the audition, the callback, because it was an audition, and then I had to go to do a callback at Warner Brothers for Bruce Timm,
sure,
who created the show, and Andrea Romano, who voice directed it. When I went to do the callback, my agent got on the phone with me and said, okay, go get it. And I drove home thinking, okay, like, I don't know if I'm going to get it, but honest to God, like, I couldn't have done it differently.
Right.
Like, that was as good as I could have done it, and I'll either get it or I won't. But man, that felt good. And, you know.
It's interesting for folks who are listening who want to get into this business on any level. That really is the best you can hope for, to feel in your gut, wow, I nailed that.
Mm-hmm.
Still, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get the gig. But if you feel good about the work that you did in the room, that's a real plus. Because so often, I know, I walk out there going, ugh, I should have, I could have, what if I had? And those nag at you on the ride.
Right,
all the way
you're
home.
Brilliant on the ride home,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And it was like, where's the brilliance when you were doing it, dummy? But that's, again, that's confidence, that's self-confidence, that's not being afraid to take chances, that's making a, you know, the best actors are the ones that, you know, will be, look foolish and not care and make a choice and just stick to the choice and make a commitment to it. I mean,
right,
you know, you do comedy, you do all of that. That's, you know, that's having a point of view, and that's also making a commitment. And, I feel like most of the time when I do an audition, it's like, I let it go. I just let it go. You know, I go in there, I try my best, and the competition is so extreme now that you really can't get caught. I mean, if you're lucky, you have an agent where you're auditioning a lot. It's like, you know, online dating. You know, that doesn't work out. All right, let's turn
next.
Right. I mean, but there's a comfort in that because you don't get too hung up on any one guy or girl.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, I booked something recently and my agent had to play me the recording because I'm like, I have no idea what that audition was because it was like a month ago or 2 months ago, whatever. And you know, you have one pretty much every day. So you lose track of what was that thing I did 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, which is a good thing.
That is the upside of voice acting versus television and film, I think, is that you do get a ton of
copy
at bats. Mm-hmm. You know, you get up there and you may get one, you know, a couple in a day or several in a week, and you feel at least like you're out there swinging, and you don't get too tense about any one audition, like you said, because there's another one coming in the afternoon.
Well, and also you're auditioning at your agent's office typically.
Right.
And you have a relationship there. I'm super comfortable at that office. Mm-hmm. Then you have to go out once in a while to a casting director, and that's when the nerves can kick in a little bit. And also the stakes are a lot higher. You've been chosen to go to that casting director. You're probably one of 35 to 55 women in the city auditioning for something that normally you can be one of 2, 3, 4. Recently, somebody told me that they heard 600 women for a commercial role.
Wow.
And I thought, really? What? Why? Why?
Right. How different could 600 people be?
Right. And when I go to audition, you know, I'll walk into the room. There'll be a bunch of other women there. And I'm like, hello. And they're like, hello. And I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Is there an echo in
there? Right. It's like, oh, well, come on. You know, it's really hard. You can start getting in your head, like, how am I going to stand out?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to slate funny? You know, like, how am I going to stand out? Because you've got to come out of the gate sounding.
Got to make an impression.
Right.
Yeah.
And how do you do that coming out of the gate? And it's, you know, it's tricky stuff.
And as you mentioned, people now are auditioning all over the country because of things like this, where you got a microphone in your house. You can record an audition in New York or Atlanta or Canada or whatever. And you can, you know, that competition just gets exponential because everyone can do it from their homes now.
And a lot of the jobs are going non-union, unfortunately.
Yeah, sadly.
So that's a real big problem. I think you lose so much of the talent. When you do that in video games, commercials, anything, but unfortunately with budgets or whatever, the reason is it's happening all over. But again, thankfully, animation, you still need to be in LA.
Yeah.
This is the town. I mean, we don't get the cosmetics like New York, Madison Avenue, but we certainly get the animation.
For sure. Let's talk about that fateful audition where you went in for Wonder Woman. The thing that changed your life.
I think
it's safe to say.
It did.
Do you remember the call? Did you remember hearing what the character was about? Was it a significant moment for you?
It was big. And I knew it was big.
Let me try to set the stage. Because at this point, I think Warner's had already had a big hit with Batman on their hands, right? Which was also Bruce Timm and those
guys. Right, and Kevin Conroy.
Right.
And Superman.
Oh, that's right. Tim Daly had done that. So they decide they're going to put together the Justice League. And I assume that was one of those auditions where they were just looking at a handful of people, right? There probably wasn't a big cattle call for Wonder Woman. Did you get requested for that? Oh, really?
There was.
Wow.
Huge cattle call. And I only know that because when I would do the show, we had so many guest stars come in, and practically every woman said to me, I read for Wonder Woman.
Wow.
And so I know so many people read for the part. And that was the general audition. And then I got a call saying, go, you know, you have a call back. And you don't usually get that in voiceover. But at a part this big, they want to make sure you can do it.
Sure.
And so I went. They gave me a picture. Bruce gave me a picture of what Diana looks like in the Justice League. And I fell in love. I really did. And I'm still in love with her. I mean, I just think she's so special. You know, I've played a lot of different iterations of the character.
Yeah, sure.
But I'll always, you know, she'll always be my favorite. And so Bruce gave me the picture. And Andrea was just like, remember the regal and the warrior. And I just need to hear that always. Those two, not one or the other, but both of those throughout your read. Okay, go. And, you know, they gave me sides and I had to perform for them. And I was scared to death. I was scared to death for the first 2 years of the show.
Really?
Yeah. I was really intimidated. I had never been a series regular. I was working with heavy hitters like Phil Lamar and Kevin, who already had this huge, you know, following from having been Batman. And, you know, Maria and Michael and Carl and who am I leaving out?
George.
I mean, they were all on camera actors.
Mm-hmm.
They all had, you know, the goods. And I felt very intimidated by them and by the experience. And I also didn't know certain things. ADR additional dialogue recording, you know, that really took me a while. Now I love it so much. And now I think it's like an art form unto itself.
Right.
But in the beginning, when you're doing all those grunts and you have to do it to picture,
yeah,
you know, when you're first recording, you're not doing it to picture. There is no picture. But when they bring you back for the all the action stuff, mm-hmm. and there she is, and you have to match it, wowza. You know, great hair. I mean, that's, it's a lot. It's a lot. And it's a learning curve. And yet, you know, you're in the big leagues.
Yeah.
And there, I mean, if I'd started out in like Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and then made my way to the Boston Red Sox, that would have been one thing. But I'm all of a sudden just in the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So it was, if I can use the sports analogy. it was very, very, very intimidating. Not to mention the guest stars we got on that show. You know, I mean, Mark Hamill
was
our Joker, for God's sakes. And, you know, he's just one of many luminaries that we had on the show.
Did you guys record together?
We did.
That's rare.
It's so awesome.
And wonderful.
It was so awesome.
To be able to play off the other actors.
Uh-huh.
For those who aren't familiar, and maybe we should back up a little bit when we're talking about ADR. When you do animation, for those who aren't familiar with the process, you go in and you lay down your lines. Often, not as lucky as they had it at Justice League, but often in isolation, you'll just read maybe a couple different versions of a line, then move on to the next one. So you don't get to interact with the other actors. And then they take that track and then they animate to that. And then when it's all said and done, maybe sometimes a year later, they bring you back in and then you have to do additional dialogue to the actual animation because they've made some changes or they've changed dialogue. But when Family Guy, I'm regular on Family Guy, and when we started, we would have Seth in the room, often a couple other actors, and it slowly got whittled down now to you just go in and you do it on your own. And I miss so much that energy of being able to work with other actors. That was so much fun.
It's huge. And especially if you're doing something like a family or a league. You know, it just really helps to have that camaraderie. I mean, and we really did have it. I'm not saying we all like went out after work and had beers together because we didn't, but we really felt the magic in that room. People ask, you know, did you know it was special? Not as special as it became. I didn't know that it was that special, but I knew that we had some magic going.
Did the show explode when it went on the air? I don't remember what the ratings were like. I remember watching it, but I don't know if it was, I mean, Batman obviously was sort of a phenomenon in terms of the viewership. Mm-hmm. Was Justice League, did it have the similar kind of reaction?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know
either.
And
I'm not going to blow smoke. I don't know. I think it did fairly well. It was on Cartoon Network.
Right.
And I think it did pretty good. But then it stopped, and then we did Justice League Unlimited.
Unlimited, yeah.
And, you know, there were all these discussions that happened behind the scenes that the actors weren't privy to at all, why that happened, and really Bruce Timm, you know, wanted to expand the universe, or they wanted him to stay. And how they did that was say, hey, you can write for all these other characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really thrilling, I think, for him. And then, you know, so we had 5 years and then we sailed off.
Did you think that was going to be the end of it when it was over?
I did.
And really?
Yeah, I did. And I have to say, we've never been reunited since then. Yeah. We've never been together to do another movie or any project, all of us together. Now, we've done some. I've done stuff with Kevin, a lot of stuff with Kevin and George.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done stuff with Timmy Daly even. But we've never been together again. And that has been a huge cause for me. I have really fought hard to get us to Comic-Cons to appear together in New York and in Denver, and to get us a movie, to do together. One of these, you know, DVDs that they have so many of. And because I think that it was so special for the fans. So many people have told me over the years that show was their childhood and that those characters were the first introduction to Wonder Woman and Flash and all these other characters. And I think that there's just this intrinsic joy in hearing the seven of us do these characters and how we play off each other, whether it's Wonder Woman and Batman or Hawkgirl and Green Lantern. People really respond. So it's been like if you follow the JL reunion hashtag, I mean, it's really been a big movement for me because it really matters to me to get this group together.
It's great that you care.
I care hugely.
A lot of people do a roll and walk away, and then that's the end of it. You know?
But if I didn't have the conversation with the fans, I don't know that I would have known. Hmm. That's the thing. I mean, Comic-Cons and social media kept the conversation going.
Right.
And so if I hadn't heard over and over and over again how much it meant to people, I wouldn't have tried. I mean, of course, we all want to work. It's not like it's not totally altruistic. I mean, of course, I want to keep voicing her.
Sure.
And I want to voice her within the context of the league. But beyond, in addition to that, I want to give the fans this. I was thrilled when there was a Wonder Woman animated, a Wonder Woman live action feature. Because my God, the fans have been waiting 30 years for that, 40 yeah. years longer. So, you know, even though I have a quasi feeling of ownership for her, I'm also genuinely attached to the fans and I want them to get what they want out of the deal too. And, so if you know anyone at Warner Brothers, if you could just
I'll make a couple calls,
do your thing.
I know some people. You also played her in, as we mentioned, the direct-to-DVD mm-hmm. films. You've played her in video games mm-hmm. with Injustice,
yeah.
1 and 2. And now you're returning again to the role in Justice League versus the Fatal Five, right? Mm-hmm. And that's later this year we're going to see that?
Yeah. You know, they haven't announced a release date, but I think, you know, spring-ish. Summer-ish.
It's just the three of you though, right? It's you and Kevin
yes,
and George.
And George.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's fantastic. And again, actors, you know, people ask me all the time, like, why aren't you all working? We have no control over this. And this is a Warner Brothers DC project. We're not running the show. So we want to just, we go where the work is, mm-hmm. frankly. But at the same time, my professional life goal is to get a movie for all of us and Hawkgirl and Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter, all of us, and have us be together. Nothing would make me happier.
Is that hashtag JLA reunion? Is that what?
JL
reunion. JL
reunion. Yeah.
All right.
And there are two.
Everyone get out there and push that.
And there are two sites on Twitter that are devoted only to the reunion. It's, you know, Justice League Animated and Animated Justice League. And they're both on Twitter and they're both just, you know, if you're a Justice League fan, they're great because it's about a bunch of other stuff, not just a reunion,
mm-hmm.
but it's also about, you know, just pushing that cause.
Well, I know the internet explodes anytime you guys are together on stage at a con reading scripts or something like that. Just the image of the seven of you sitting together, working together makes everyone's heart sore. I mean, just, it's just great.
And ours too. That's yeah. the thing. When we did Denver not too long ago, you know, the room was packed and there's Andrea Romano, telling the fans that if they, you know, do another movie, she'll come out of retirement to direct it.
Wow.
And it was just a really big love letter, in the room, like to them, to the fans and from us to them. I mean, it's really mutual. And, you can see how much we love the characters and you can see how much the fans love the characters. And, you know, we're lucky. That's a big gift from, you know, the gods, if you will, to get a part that resonates with people. Linda Carter did it for 3 years.
Yeah.
And all these years later, she's still, you know, I mean, she's still known as Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge accomplishment to be able to do that in 3 years. So,
as I mentioned, I was friends with Adam West and, mm-hmm. you know, Adam, that character became part of him for 50 years after
exactly.
he was done
and he
with
was
the
so
work.
Beloved.
Yeah.
So beloved from
yeah.
that. Yep.
Did you have any passing knowledge of the comic book world at all before you started this gig?
No.
You really didn't?
Well, that's not true. I mean, I read Archie comics and I watched certain cartoons. Like I loved Scooby-Dooby-Doo and the Jetsons and things like that. But no, not like origin story. I mean, and it's really super confusing. Like if you're a novice,
it's dense stuff. Yeah.
Oh man, it's so hard to, you know, really navigate that. But I did have some people tell me like, okay, you want to start with this or you want to start with that, read this, read that. And so I tried to educate myself, but
did you read stuff? Did you read comics once you got the gig?
I did. And there are certain people I reached out to, again, through Twitter, you know, because I wanted to know, like, there's no one who loves her more than like somebody like Kat Staggs or Phil Jimenez.
Yeah.
Both who draw her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I reached out to artists. You know, when I joined Twitter, it wasn't about like following some celebrity. It was about trying to figure out the community because I was going to be a part, you know, I had been a part of it and yet hadn't really been a part of it.
Right.
And so it was like, okay, who's in this community? And so I reached out to comic book writers, comic book artists, and really that's still, you know, most of the people I follow or who follow me, a lot of them are from that world.
When did you start doing cons? How soon into the job? Or was it afterwards when it was over when you started? Or
we did go to San Diego Comic-Con when the show was on.
Huh.
I have pictures of me and Kevin and George from like 2002. And it's really great. It's really great. But then, of course, there was a huge break. And then the show ended. And then there was a huge break. And then Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, Justice League Doom. And then, of course, the interest started to come back. And then you get invitations.
Right.
You know, you're not going to get an invitation without there being some, either you made a huge, magnificent impact with a character or you have a project. That's mm-hmm. going to get some attention.
Yeah.
So luckily I had some projects.
Although it seems like the nature of social media and the internet has created such a wide fan base that you could have been, you know, a second lead in an episode of Star Trek 50 mm-hmm. years ago. And still people are interested and want to come up and talk to those people and get autographs and things like that. So it seems there is, a wide enough audience out there that you, I would think, would be popular almost anywhere you went.
And yet, thank you. And yet it's changing a lot too. The Comic Cons are changing. There are a lot more events happening at the cons.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And so there aren't a lot of places. It's not like, okay, yeah, sure, come.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, we have this event and that event. I mean, I'm not even talking about the big, big, huge celebrity events.
Right, right.
But, you know, they have other things that have gotten very, very popular. Critical Role, for instance. So that takes a bunch of tables out of the game.
Right.
Because those are voiceover actors and on camera. So, you know, it has gotten a lot more competitive to go to the cons and trying to find your place. So, it's all good. Like, I don't need to do a con a weekend. I don't even need to do a con a month. As long as I'm doing some, I'm happy as a clam.
What's your interaction like with the fans generally? What do you get a lot of female fans who say, you know, Wonder Woman is a hero or it was an influence when they were girls or is it across the board? What's the average experience like for you when you meet your fans?
It's an older person
mm-hmm.
who grew up on the Justice League and maybe now has sat with their kid and shown their kid the Justice League. It's men and women and it's gay, straight. It's across the board, which, you know, couldn't make me happier.
Sure.
I mean, I just love that. You know, she's such a universal icon. So, everyone knows her, whether it's from, you know, the movies, the cartoon, the comic books. She's so beloved. So just to have like a sliver of that love coming my way,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's really, extraordinary. It really, really is. And so I just keep, you know, I love talking to the fans on social media. And then if I'm lucky enough to go to a Comic-Con and meet them in person, that's even better. But, and I have friends who I've met who are fans of the show that have become genuine friends of mine.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. When I think about that, yeah, really good friends of mine. And there are people that follow me who can, they know they can DM me and ask me questions. And
like, would you be on my podcast? Like people like that?
As a matter of fact,
that's how we met was on Twitter.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you followed me, I was like, what? I was giddy. I know it's, you know, I mean, it's just like, you're always a little surprised that people know who you are.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks for the follow.
No, my pleasure. You kidding me? I'm such a huge fan. Have you had any interaction with any of the other Wonder Women? Have you ever met Linda or Gal Gadot or
any? Have.
Really?
Yeah, I've met Shannon. Shannon and I are friends.
Wow.
I have met Gal a couple of times and I've met, Linda more than a couple of times, a few times, and I've seen her nightclub act. And
it's full circle. It's like Steve and Edie all over again, watching Linda Carter sing the classics.
Oh my God, going to that club, that supper club, it was brilliant. And Christy Marston, I should add, is a very good friend of mine, and her grandfather, William Moulton Marston, created the character of Wonder Woman.
Right.
And she has become a very close friend. So when you get her blessing, it's pretty much, you know, like the blessing from the Pope.
Sure.
If I were religious or even Catholic.
Do you have any merch or anything? Are you a collector? Do you sort of have little Wonder Woman tchotchkes and stuff around the house? Do you really?
I have a lot, and I have them in my closet in many boxes. And I appreciate having it because recently I was involved with a charity event for homeless children. And I was able to bring a lot of my Wonder Woman merch for the silent auction. So that, you know, you go into the closet, you dig through the closet and you're like, oh, this would be great.
Right.
And so, you know, I love it. And fans will give me things, which is so beautiful. And, I have a lot of stuff and I love it. I love having it.
I always thought if I was ever lucky enough to land an iconic role like you or, and I got this idea actually from Mark Hamill, because I think in his contract with the original Star Wars films, he said, I need to get one of everything that is featuring me in terms of the toys and stuff, because he's a big nerd. And so he got everything. And I said, that would be so awesome to have all the stuff connected to a character that you were such a close relationship with.
And it is like, I was just honored to be invited to Sideshow Collectibles. Where
they do such great work.
Brilliant. And they gave me a tour. They invited me and George because they were introducing the Wonder Woman and Superman character, you know, statues.
Right.
And so they gave us a tour of the place and, fed us lunch. And, it was so, so cool. Now it would be even cooler if I were geeky.
That's true. Yeah. Right? You're not even a geek.
I'm not. But I am geeky about the Justice League Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And I do have original cells.
Oh, my Lord.
With Bruce's signature and my signature. And
Pretty cool.
I have a few of those, and those are like my prized possessions.
I can imagine. Well, I'm looking forward to Fatal Five to see you
do my thing.
Put that tiara on again and get that golden lasso twirling.
Man.
And now even more than I was before, and I was already on board, but a JL reunion with all you guys would just be the best.
Yeah, and you could host.
I'm telling you, I'm working my way through the whole team. So I got five more to put on my mantle.
Yeah, and then host us at one of these cons.
I'll host us and we'll do a big announcement, and I got to get a hold of Warner Brothers and make this happen.
Okay.
All right. Susan, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.